Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And some fun stuff because it's basketball season and it's March Madness. With no further ado, let's go to our leadoff man, Sam Mitchell, former Timberwolves player and head coach, now does, for NBA TV, of course, is an analyst there and breaks it all down. Sam, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Mike. How you doing, man? I heard your monologue before you came on, brought me on, and you're right, man. That was a heavy day.
Heavy day.
In the Twin Cities.
Heavy. Yeah. You know, when people ask you, since you've traveled, they know your background in Minnesota, I mean, did they ask you a lot when this was going on all summer about Minneapolis?
Yeah, they did, Mike. And, you know, I was there for 15 years, man. I consider it my second home. I'm there in the Twin Cities a lot of times in the summertime. And I tell people, It's a totally different place. It's one of the nicest, freest places that I ever lived. And it's unfortunate that Mike, look, the thing people have to understand, there's bad people everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's bad people that do bad things in all communities. And the sad thing about it is the actions of three people can just put such a black eye or stain on such a wonderful city like Minneapolis. And you think of the athletes that have come through Minneapolis that love that place. You think about how much KG loves Minneapolis and Kirby Puckett, how much he loved it. And so, and these guys are from, you know, KG is from the deepest of the South of South Carolina, and I think Kirby was from Chicago.
Yeah.
The late great. And so it's just unfortunate that, you know, a small group of people can cause such a thing. But the thing that I'm really hopeful of is that the good people of Minneapolis, and I've been following the news, the things that the people are doing in the community, the things that people are doing, the right, that wrong, some of the changes that the mayor and city council are making. So they're going to make sure that they get this right and nothing like this happens again. And it's unfortunate, but hopefully we learn as people to start treating each other better, be kind to each other, understanding of each other, just understand that we all want the same thing, right? Everybody wants the same thing, just to live as peaceful a life as possible.
Amen. Amen. And I hope we can get there, and I hope this represents progress today and beyond. I guess the trial will determine some of that. Hey, explain the Timberwolves last night. I don't know where they play this unbelievable game. Is that just the NBA, or what is that?
Mike, that's the NBA, especially during COVID. And the Timberwolves play great, and they have talent. You know, you look at people forget Karl Anthony Towns made 13 all NBA his second year. They have some talent. And now they're missing Beasley, who I think is a big piece, but they have some talent. But you look at the NBA and then you look at New Orleans, a young team, they're trying to figure things out. And if the Timberwolves can get that kind of consistent effort and that kind of focus, then I still don't think they'll make the playoffs, but at least they can start putting the team on the right path and start seeing a brighter future.
How good is Edwards?
I think he has to be special. I mean, you look at the thing, look, this year is all about, think about this, Mike. They didn't have summer league. Then they didn't have the 2 months between summer league and training camp. Because normally you have summer league, and summer league reaffirms what you need to do to get better, right? It points out all your weaknesses. Because all these guys think they're hot stuff when they get drafted, especially when they get drafted number one. So summer leagues point out all your weaknesses. And then you have those 2 months in between summer league and training camp to work on those things at the team facility. And then you have training camp, and then you go into season. So look at all the time, and then look at this. Teams actually do practice during the season, so there's no practice time now. There's very limited gym time. So you just think about, and I heard you say the governor is starting to relax things. You know, more people are being vaccinated. You know, the president said by 4th of July, we should be able to have gatherings. And I know in the South, things are going to be back to normal because Alabama has already announced they're going to have 100,000 plus.
He saw that.
the governor, the president.
I don't even know if they asked permission.
They didn't ask. And I guess when you Alabama and Nick Saban the coach,
you say what we're going to do, yeah.
But, Mike, I really think that he missed, you know, all these rookies missed all of that court time. And so just think about when we're able to get back to doing things somewhat normal and look at the leaps and bounds, because you don't get better during the season. You get better in the offseason.
Now, the last time that I talked to you, you were up here a couple years ago for the Final Four. We shot some horse right here at the studio when we had our basketball arena up down here. But you were coaching at Memphis, at the University of Memphis there with Penny Hardaway. Did you like that? Was that a fun experience, the college game? And has it evolved to a point where you're going, this is a fun thing to do?
I did, Mike, and it was only for 1 year. You know, Penny, that's an interesting story. The way I got to Memphis for the year, Penny was originally talking to Coach Larry Brown, and Larry couldn't do it for whatever reason. And Penny and I knew each other from playing golf, and we had mutual acquaintances. And then we got together and talked, and he said, Coach, come down. You know, you can check that box. You can see how it is to coach in college and get out and recruit. And I said, well, Penny, if I'm going to do it, I want to experience everything. Because initially, he wanted me to be a bench coach. I said, no, if I'm going to do it, if I'm going to learn, I need to do everything, so I need to be involved in the APR. I need to be involved in the scheduling, making sure the kids are where they're supposed to be. I need to be heavily involved in the recruiting. And one of the kids that I recruited was Precious Achiuwa, Miami's first-round pick. And so it was a great experience. I enjoyed it. It's a different kind of atmosphere than the NBA. And my college coach used to say this all the time. The difference between professional sports in college, other than the money, obviously, it's the relationships. You know, when you're a professional coach, these guys are used to coaches being changed all the time. And as a player, when one coach is dismissed and another coach comes on, you may miss that coach, Mike, but you're trying to figure out, how can I work the new coach to keep my minutes and get more shots? You know, that's just human nature. But in college, you build lifelong relationships. And my college coach passed away during COVID about 4 months ago, and we did a virtual service where I was able to speak. And we kept in touch. All our teammates showed up the way we could, and it was just, we all reminisced about how much he meant to us and how important he was in our life.
You know, Sam, obviously there could be openings, and people are going to say, well, Minnesota opening, ask about that. I mean, I know you don't want to, you're not looking at specifics, and you respect people that have jobs and all those things. But the game, the college game has become such a transfer portal kind of a thing. Is that a huge way, or can you still build the old-fashioned way? What did you learn about that?
Well, Mike, listen, I actually like it and embrace it, because think about this. As a college coach, you come in and you sell your program, and this young man commits to you. And then, and you know how things are, Mike. People tell you one thing, everybody's going to be on their best to get you there. And then once they get you on the court, maybe you're not as good as the coach thought. Maybe the coach is coaching in a different style, but things change. So why make a kid or bury a kid on the bench when he can enter the transfer portal and go somewhere else where he can be happy and play? So I'm actually all for it, because to me, when you go in someone's living room and you recruit them and you make certain promises, first of all, make sure that kid is the type of player that you want. Second of all, once you make a commitment to a certain style, then you got to honor that commitment. And if you don't, that kid should have the right to seek somewhere else to play. So I actually like it. We embraced it. And, Mike, something that we used to do in Memphis, we used to try to turn it around a little bit. We used to make the kids feel special by, the University of Memphis, Penny Hardaway, Mike Miller on the coaching staff, Sam Mitchell and all this, that we want to recruit you. So we would send out a formal letter letting them know that we were interested in recruiting them. So we just had some quirky ways of doing things, but we embraced the transfer portal because we just thought it was only fair.
I always hear that the key now to recruiting in any high school kid, or I guess transfer portal, doesn't matter, is they all believe they're going to the NBA, and you have to facilitate that dream, whether you think it's realistic or not. Is that a big part of it? Because these kids have been through and had enough success at camps and AAU programs that they all believe they're going to the NBA, so they're looking for somebody that can get them there?
Michael, you've heard me say this a lot of times now. And when I call you Michael, I'm being serious. Michael, I was so bad a basketball player in high school, I didn't make the team until the 11th grade. The 11th grade, I averaged 2 points and 14 rebounds. I tell kids this all the time. But my dream was to play in the NBA. I went to Mercer University. No one knew who I was. I had to do it the hard way. But I played 13 years in the NBA because I had a dream. And the great thing about my dream, not one coach along the way when I told them my dream tried to crush my dream. Hmm. They told me what I need to do to get better. If I recruit you and you tell me that's what you want to do, but Mike, this also that I realized, but they didn't let me be a fool. They made sure I had my college degree in my back pocket as a fallback. See, part of recruiting these kids is, look, we're not going to crush your dreams, but we're going to teach you about how to make adult decisions. And part of those decisions is you don't put all your eggs in one basket, and you have a fallback plan. And if you got that college degree in your back pocket, you have a pretty strong fallback plan. And once you have that, then it frees you up. My dad used to tell me this all the time, son, with that college degree in your back pocket, it frees you up to pursue your dream because you know you can always go get a job.
Why did you only score 2 points a game as a junior? And I mean, did you have a growth spurt, or was it just about hard work?
Nope, hard work. I wasn't a good basketball player. Mike, I actually thought I was going to go to college and be a football player. I played tight end and free safety. I started in high school as a sophomore, and that's what I wanted to do. But being 6'6 and 160 pounds, didn't do well in football. And then I thought I was tougher than what my body would allow me. So I was always hitting people, and I was always hurt. So finally, my mother made me quit, and she said, why don't you try basketball, since all your other brothers in the house played basketball. And the first year I made the team because I was tall, I was just terrible.
I was talking to a high school coach today, a pretty good one, and he said, you know, what colleges are looking for now are kids that are tough, mentally and physically tough. Obviously, that's how you got to the big league, so to speak. But can you teach a kid to be tough, or do they either have it or they don't?
The late, great Bill Musselman, you remember that name, Mike? If you remember Musk, he preached about mental toughness. Think about it. I don't know how someone say, are you born with mental toughness? I don't know. But I tell you this, I played for Bill Musselman. We as a team, we learn mental toughness. Yes, you can teach it. Mental toughness, Mike, is a state of mind, and it's just not allowing yourself to quit when you want to. That's it. My wife and I was having a conversation the other night, and I told her the difference. She was talking to me about coaching and coaches get fired and things like that. She's like, why would anyone want to do that job? And I said, honey, you have to understand. You understand that going in that you're going to get fired one day. That's the job. But the beauty of the job is look how many people you get to touch. And it's the highest form of competition other than playing. So for me, I love competition. When I'm not coaching basketball, I'm in the gym working somebody kid out. So I do believe that you can develop mental toughness.
You know, shooting, we watch, and the Gophers are an example, but there's other teams as well. You know, they did things pretty well yesterday against Ohio State to get back in. They just can't shoot. And the same thing when they beat Northwestern. Open shots, just they don't make them. And I'm going, it looks like they have the right form. Right? What is it about shooting? Why are some teams so good at it? Other teams look like, you know, they got the same form, the same looks, and they can't knock them down.
Well, Mike, sometimes you recruit good shooters.
Yep.
But You can create good shooters, and it depends. Look, when I was the head coach in Toronto, one of the things that we did, we had a pre-practice shooting routine that all the guys participated. So before practice, you had to get up a certain amount of shots with a coach. Then I incorporated a lot of shooting. I carved out 30 minutes within our practice because think about it. Players are they understand the things that you think are important. If you incorporate and give time to things that you think are important as a coach in practice, players are going to understand that, and they're going to focus in on it. So I would incorporate 30 to 45 minutes of my two 2 hour and 15 minute practice, just shooting and shooting drills alone. And then after practice, I had another rule. If you wanted to shoot threes, you had to get up a certain amount of attempts a day, and then you had to shoot a certain percentage doing those shooting drills to be allowed to shoot threes in the game. And all the players thought that was fair because, again, I didn't put on any limitations on who could shoot them. But my whole thing was, if you put the work in and you get proficient at it, then you're allowed to do it.
Why are there some kids, I guess pros probably too, but you probably don't get to the NBA if you are this way, that they can flat out knock it down in an open gym all day, and in a game they can't?
Well, Mike, I mean, that's confidence. And then you got to take, look, as a coach, it's your job to remove the fear from a player. You know, most people, when you're playing in front of, you know, thousands of people and then another few million watching, and you miss shots, it can get in your head. But when you look over to the bench, I'll never forget, you know, the nights that I've struggled, and I looked over to the bench, and Larry Brown, Bill Musselman, Flip Saunders, they gave me that nod and a wink to let me know that, look, keep shooting. Flip was unique. If you were missing shots and you passed down an open shot, Flip would take you out of the game.
Huh.
Flip, it never bothered Flip if you shot a bad percentage. If you put the work in and you just had a bad shooting night, it bothered Flip if you were afraid to shoot when you were open. So I love that side of Flip, that he would encourage you or make you continue to shoot because he had faith in you, and he would not allow you to lose your confidence.
Well, I could go all night with this stuff. Sam, thank you so much for giving us some time. I know you got TV work to do and everything else, but thanks for giving us some time and some insight.
Anytime, my friend.
You bet. Sam Mitchell.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.